Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in Wiener v. Wasson.
May it please the court, Mr. Stanley Houston will present an argument for petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, my name is Stan Houston. I represent the petitioner in this case, Dr. Bruce Weiner. The issue, I believe, is fairly straightforward and involves one question. Does Article 4599, Section 10.01, the statute of limitations in a medical malpractice case, violate the open court's due process provision of the Texas Constitution every single time it is applied to any claim brought to a minor or someone, frankly, under the age of 20? If that statute operates to bar their claim, is that statute automatically unconstitutional under the open court provision? The facts are not really in dispute. This is not a fact-specific issue.
And that's the first issue, but there's another issue. And you're going to argue both.
Well, the main issue, I think the issue, there's a twofold issue, but the facts in the underlying case pretty much set forth that, yes, the statute, I understand what you're saying. Yes, there are really two issues, whether or not is the statute constitutional, and even if it is, as I argued to the court, the trial court, in this case, did Emmanuel Watson wait too long, even after he turned 18, before filing suit? In the underlying case at the trial court, Emmanuel Watson testified in his deposition, admitted that he was aware of his cause of action within months after the alleged malpractice took place. There is no issue under a Morrison versus Chan analysis or anything of that nature concerning whether or not they didn't or his mother didn't know and weren't aware of not only the alleged malpractice, but also the injuries he's claiming in his suit.
Help me understand that. How is that possible? Here we have a young man with a hip surgery, he has constant pain. The doctor says it's all in your head, quit using the crutches. How is his mother able to detect that there was malpractice done to him?
Your Honor, in the record attached to Dr. Weiner's motion for summary judgment, I took Emmanuel Watson's deposition, and he admitted that within 2 months after Dr. Weiner's care, he went to another doctor. And according to Emmanuel Watson, the other doctor told him that Dr. Weiner had not given him good care, that he was going to undergo injuries in the future. And he admitted that in his deposition. Whether or not that's true or not, that is a judicial admission by the plaintiff himself in his deposition testimony. That was attached and authenticated and used in support of the motion for summary judgment. I was very careful to do that. There was no controverting testimony or no controverting evidence filed at the trial court in response to that motion for summary judgment. And therefore, it was undisputed from the record, and I think it has to be assumed for the sake of appeal, that Emmanuel Watson and his mother were aware of his injury, knew of the alleged malpractice within 2 months of the injuries, and yet they didn't file suit for 4 years.
Mr. Houston, is there any, the Medical Liability Act uses the age of 14 as being a cutoff for a minor, saying if the injury occurs before 12, then they have the age of 14. Is there any significance to the using the age of 14 in that act?
Well, in fact, Your Honor, yes, Your Honor, I think it is significant. Because the predecessor to Article 4599, Section 10.01, was Article 5.82 of the Texas Insurance Code. And in fact, that's the statute that was addressed in Sachs versus Bottle, the case that was been cited by the respondents. In fact, I'm sure the court is aware. And in fact, when the legislature enacted Article 4599, detailed testimony was taken from psychologists, different neurologists, concerning the ability of a child, say age 6, which was what it was in Article 5.82, versus an older child to communicate his feelings to his parents or other persons. There was detailed debate concerning whether or not the statute should be told for a shorter period of time or a longer period of time. And the legislature chose and selected that tolling provision. The legislature, after considering all of the issues and listening to both sides, chose a compromise between tolling and limitations indefinitely to age 18, and then giving minors to approximately 20, which is how the Section 16.001 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code operates, versus setting a tolling period from age 12 and then giving minors to age 14. I think that is significant because that reflects legislative policy and legislative judicial decision-making instead of statute of limitations, making the statute constitutional, as I'll argue.
How do you prevail with Sachs on the books. There's some arguments that this that 4590I section 10.01 has never been ruled on, but Sachs did the predecessor statute, which had a different age, as you point out, but it's, why shouldn't we decide this case based on Sachs?
Two reasons, Your Honor, and I think, to be honest, I think some of the concepts in Sachs require reassessment now.
So you want us to overrule Sachs?
Not entirely. I think that Sachs goes too far. Sachs would hold that this court must, in every instance, no matter who the minor is, no matter who the minor's parent is, whether or not the minor has a lawyer, whether or not the minor has had a lawsuit pending for 2 years, the non-citizen's lawyer, under the principles of Sachs, this court would be required to hold in every instance that the statute of limitations is unconstitutional. And that doesn't further public policy purposes. I believe that, I don't know exactly the facts specific of Sachs, but what I'm asking the court to do, as I've set forth in my brief, is look at each case on a case-by-case basis. Not necessarily broad stroking and holding that every time a minor brings a suit, that the statute of limitations is unconstitutional.
But there has to be some initial threshold, doesn't there?
The initial threshold was laid down in Liebholm versus the city of Galveston.
Well, I mean in terms of the child's age. If we're going to look at, are we going to do a case-by-case basis for a six-year-old child?
Well, it wouldn't be required, Your Honor, because the statute holds limitations until the child reaches age 12 to age 14. So that wouldn't be a constitutional analysis. The issue would always revolve around any child who was probably over the age of 14 who didn't bring suit within 2 years.
Well, 14 would be the last.
Would be the last.
The last time. The last because time. It's 12-year.
It's told in 12 years, and then they have 2 years, so it goes until right. 14. So
we're going to look at some 14-year-olds, and limitations will bar their claims, and others it will not.
That's right. Just like in adult claims, in Morrison versus Chin, Neagle versus Nelson, some of the other claims and the litany of litigation and judicial opinion that have been written on Article 4599, some adults may or may not be aware of their cause of action. And to apply the statute strictly 2 years from the last date of treatment, for example, would be unconstitutional. However, as this court has written, just because in some instances with adult claims the statute is constitutional, that doesn't justify a broad stroke abolition of the statute, so to speak, as to all adult claims. You look at it, I'm sorry.
Go ahead and finish.
Look at it on a case-by-case basis is all.
Ms. Houston, is there a distinction between the notion of a discovery of a tort claim, an adult not being aware of their cause of action, and a tolling provision because of a legal disability of the injured person? In other words, you have a minor who is injured. It seems to me the law is that until a minor reaches 18, they are under a legal disability. They could sue, but they don't have to sue. But we presume that they're not an adult at that point. And the statute of limitations doesn't begin running until they reach the age of majority. On the other hand, it seems to me the Medical Liability Act, at least arguably, has always been discussed in terms of simply an attempt to do away with the discovery rule or prevent the discovery rule from applying in medical liability cases. That is, 2 years begins to run from the last date of treatment or from the injury, period, such that even if unaware of the injury, a plaintiff is barred. That appears to do away with the discovery rule, but does that impact in any way the legal disability rule, which is the 2 year statute of limitations simply doesn't run while a person has a legal disability?
If I'm understanding your question correctly, I think those are two different parts of the statute. The legal disability, the tolling provision, there is a tolling provision in other statutes. That's because the legislature has chosen to toll statutes of limitations. For example, in a general liability, limitations are tolled until the child reaches 18 and they have an effect till 20 to sue because the legislature has chosen to enact a statute unlike that tolling provision. 4590I, when it comes to medical malpractice cases, the legislature chose to only toll limitations until age 12. Now, also the legislature chose to do away with the discovery rule. So technically a minor at 14 could be outside the tolling provision, but if he still didn't know or had no reason to know of his cause of action, then that would be a separate analysis, if I'm understanding your question correctly.
And you do.
Yeah.
You concede that if they didn't know, if Emanuel didn't know or couldn't know, that this would be unconstitutionally applied to him.
Well, again, there would be more hypotheticals if he didn't know within the two-year time period and had no reason to know. Under Morrison versus Chin, I would say it'd be hard pressed to argue otherwise that if he didn't know. But the facts of this case are he admitted. I mean, I was very careful because I've been doing these kind of cases for a long time and looked at the law on that. Was very careful to take his deposition and establish through his own deposition testimony that he did know. Even had a lawyer within that time period. So. This isn't that kind of case. The question is this:
Why shouldn't his lawyer be entitled to rely on the rule in Sachs?
Because Sachs didn't apply to Article 4599, Section 10.01. Sachs applied to a different statute.
But in all candor, lawyers who do what you do for a living, and lawyers who are on the other side of the docket, would look at Sachs and suppose that that would apply to a nearly identical statute under 4590,
Well, I didn't. I'm not saying I never had, because Sachs, the legislature didn't
move. What you had been if you were a Minnesota doctor?
Well, whether or not I would if I was a plaintiff, I think if anybody looks, if there's a statute out there that says bring a lawsuit within 2 years and there's no case that says that statute is unconstitutional, I'm not here to argue whether a lawyer should or shouldn't do it, but what I'm here to argue is to say that if, to the extent Sachs does or is held to apply broadly to this statute, the principles must be revisited. The only way that Sachs would apply to Article 4599 is to take that assumption in Sachs that parents can't be relied on to bring a lawsuit for any child under the age of 18, and therefore assume that for that reason, the statute unconstitutionally affects the right of redress. And that's
if we were to affirm Sachs in its entirety, how do you win?
If you were to affirm the principle and espouse and follow the two-pronged Sachs test and hold that in every instance a minor whose parents, no matter if they're lawyers or in any instance, that minor's right of redress is wrong, and also hold that the legislature didn't have the power to place any restrictions on the statute of limitations and totally disregard all of the policy provisions set forth by the legislature, which you would have to do to uphold Sachs.
That's the assumption. How do you win?
I would win on the second grounds and then point 3 and 4 of my motion for summary judgment and points 3 and 4 that I brought forth to the court, because as I set forth there, that even if Emanuel Watson couldn't bring, we have to assume that he couldn't bring a suit prior to the age of 18. The day he turned 18, he knew of his cause of action, he had a lawyer, he had every right to the court, but he waited 20 months to bring suit. And as I've set forth in my brief, and that was really my second argument, I think in this court is held.
He would have his right to 20 months at least 5 years, and a reasonable time.
At a reasonable time, and I think in this case, this court should take, if the court chooses to take that path, the court should lay down what is a reasonable and not a reasonable time at least.
And we can do that as a matter of law? Or
Your Honor,
a fact-finding find the fact testimony.
I think that certain areas may be gray areas and would require fact-finding, but the court can state, because it would be a constitutional analysis, the court could set forth certain time periods that would, as a matter of law, operate to unconstitutionally bar the claim. Specifically in a case where the individual has a lawyer and waits an unreasonable amount of time as a matter of law. The courts of appeals have done it. This court hasn't done it, has not set forth the time period.
So we make up our own statute of limitations, so kind of a sliding scale. If you have a lawyer, you get so long.
The reason you would make up your statute of limitations would be only if this court chooses to disregard the statute of limitations that the legislature has taken.
Well, that's
then
right.
We're outside.
Okay. We're into this second hypothetical. You don't have to repeat your whole first argument.
Okay.
Under points 3 and 4.
Well, you wouldn't be setting your statute of limitations, Your Honor, because then the question would be,
at what point would it be unconstitutional to abridge the cause of action, not necessarily the statute of limitations, but that if someone went beyond the statute of limitations, when would it be unconstitutional to bar their claim?
You're saying that we disregard the traditional statute of limitations and the tradition that it's told until one attains their majority. Is that right?
Not disregard. I'm talking about, I used the wrong word. Right. If you held it unconstitutional.
Statute of limitations is 2 years.
In a medical practice.
And you're saying that we should just simply disregard that if we find that it has to be told. That 12 is not, you know, it's not appropriate, it violates the Constitution. It has to be told until a person reaches the age of majority, the legal 18. Majority.
Yes.
And you're saying that instead of simply tolling it, we give them some fairly nebulous, reasonable time after they acquire that majority to bring suit and not give them the full statute, the 2 year statute?
Because the reason I would say that would be because the person would have arguably already had whatever time period they were tolling, and then discovered their cause of action at age 18, and they should then be given.
Well, if you toll it, you don't count it. You simply don't count it at all. It doesn't start to run during the tolling period. It only starts to run at the end of the tolling period. And you don't give them the 2 years then, though. You give them some lesser period of time.
The same as any adult who suddenly discovers his cause of action, then gets a reasonable.
But this person's not an adult until they reach 18 in this study.
But when they reach 18, then they're given a reasonable amount of time, the same as if an adult age 20.
No, if adult age 20 was injured, they have 2 years. And they can go on in the end of the 23rd month and file that lawsuit. And that's a reasonable period of time. You're saying that this person can't do that once their cause of action arises as an independent adult.
I'm not saying that, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that if the person, if this court holds that the statute is unconstitutional and then states that the minor has some point in time after they turn age 18, the same as if the court held the statute unconstitutional to an adult, a person who didn't know their cause of action, say for 5 years, who had no idea of the malpractice. In those cases...
Say if we find that 12-year-old cutoff or the 14-year-old cutoff unconstitutional, that it doesn't just disappear. We need to substitute something in its absence.
It would be more equitable to require people to bring suits in certain specified situations with lawyers who are aware of their cause of action to go ahead and bring those suits. Yes, sir, Your Honor, that's what I am saying.
Who's going to, if you have a parent, legal guardian that doesn't want to bring this suit for a person, I mean, you know, for some reason, philosophical purposes, reasons are some, or because the offending physician is a personal friend, or medical practitioner of any kind, and does not bring it in behalf of the child as an ex-friend, what's that child to do?
Well, that was my whole point. Instead of broadly holding the statute of limitations unconstitutional in every event, in that case, the child could bring forth evidence when the defendant filed a motion for summary judgment demonstrating that in this circumstance, that in this circumstance with this child, in this particular scenario, that child's constitutional rights have been abridged. That child has not been given redress under the due process provision of the Texas Constitution. And look at it on a case-by-case basis instead of in every situation holding them constitutional, because that's going to not encourage the prompt bringing of lawsuits, whereas looking at it case by case basis with. That's my point on that.
I'm sorry, the court will indulge me a question. Is it critical to your position that this court consider that a minor child's rights may be prejudiced by a relative or a guardian? Is the significance of the 14-year age cutoff or the 12-year age cutoff on this statute presuppose that a guardian who fails to sue on their behalf or a parent who fails to respond to their complaints can prejudice the minor's right to sue for the minor's injuries?
That's right. And in the cases I've cited in other jurisdictions, they pretty much held the same thing. We allow our parents to do a lot of things for our children in this case, and that's my point in my brief. I won't belabor the points I think I've made in my brief.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, W. James Crosser, Jr. and Sir Richard P. Bowen, Jr. will present argument to respond. Mr. Bowen, speaking of the first. verse 12 says, is to cross over the continuum to the next apex.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. Your Honor, there is only one way that this court can find the statute constitutional, either in terms of Sachs or in terms of any of the four points of error brought by the petitioner in this case. And that is if this court has some type of a super legislature in creating a court-made statute of limitations, imposes Emanuel Wasson on some type of legal capacity which he did not have. As a matter of fact, he was not an adult. He was not born in the eyes of the law until he turned 18 years old. And this court was correct in Sachs when it said that this limitations period is void. If it is void, we then are talking about, in terms of this case-by-case reasonable basis analysis, we're talking about an unconstitutional statute, and the court must then decide where do we go to get the limitations period.
I understand that's the common law. And it has been for a long time. I guess it used to be 21. If the legislature chooses to change that, where in the Constitution do we look to say that never can you be forced to bring a lawsuit for a period of time of up to 18 years, or a maximum of 18 years in the extreme circumstances?
Your Honor, if fact strikes down this limitations period, then the question is where does the court look to determine the limitations period? What you do is you look to the statute.
No, we're going to get to that in a minute. But where, if the legislature chooses to modify its own statute and longstanding common law and say that in certain instances minors will be forced to bring a suit, where in the Constitution do we look to say, no, the longstanding tradition is constitutionally enshrined and you can have no impairment of a minor's full right to bring suit after reaching majority?
Your Honor, I would say you look to the open courts provision in Article 1, Section 13 of the Texas Constitution, just as the court did in Sachs. And you don't really look to the common law to determine the statute in this situation. If that statute is void, the court looks to the residual statute that the legislature has provided in Section 16.001 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, which is a two-year statute of limitations. Not a reasonable case-by-case basis analysis.
Is there any Texas case that's held that? Some may have assumed it.
That has held that we should look to that statute?
Yes.
Not in this context, Your Honor, that I'm aware of, no.
Well, assuming you're right, and Sachs would make this statute unconstitutionally applied to an 18-year-old or anyone younger, why couldn't it constitutionally be applied to a 19-year-old? You're looking back to the two-year tolling provision under 16.001 of the Civil Practices and Remedies Code, I assume, and why is the minor entitled to two more years to age 20 as opposed to an earlier provision under the Medical Liability Insurance Improvement Act at age 14?
The reason he gets 2 years, Your Honor, is because the legislature says he gets 2 years. And that is because...
Well, the legislature says he gets 14 years, but we agree, assuming we agree with you that it's unconstitutionally applied up to age 18,
right.
Why can't it be constitutionally applied at 19?
Because you don't need to, Your Honor. You're really asking yourself to do too much work there. What the court should do, we submit, is look to the legislature and say, what did the legislature tell us to do? If this statute is unconstitutional, then the tolling provision we submit would apply.
Do you think the legislature really told us to give him two more years?
Your Honor, I think that you apply the legislative enactment that exists in the context in which you're asked to apply it. And that is, if the other statute's unconstitutional, you apply the one that was the other statute. You apply the tolling provision. And that's not specifically stated in Sachs. However, these cases that exist in other courts in other states, Your Honors, do say that. And I wanted to bring that point up because in their brief, the petitioner has cited a number of other jurisdictions in saying that these kinds of statutes survive constitutional attack. That is not entirely correct. What our research shows is that most of the cases cited, the 12 states cited in the brief, are equal protection or due process cases. Of the open courts cases cited in that brief and others, Texas is actually in the majority in terms of open courts attacks in striking down these statutes as unconstitutional. And in those open courts cases, for example, I think it's in Arizona and in and West Virginia and other cases, and I'll submit a supplemental brief to the court on this point, We do, and I think it's Ohio says, if you strike down the statute as unconstitutional, you then give them the residual tolling period.
Is the 18-year period of legal disability constitutional? And why can't the legislature, perhaps following up on the Chief Justice's question, why can't the legislature change the period of legal disability?
Because of the Constitution and the open courts provision.
So it is 18 years of legal disability is constitutional?
No. The court must guarantee under the Constitution, as the final arbiter of the Constitution, that every person has access to the courts for an injury received. In this case, Emmanuel Watson's not a person until 18 years of age.
If the legislature changes that to 17, since you can vote at 17, you draft it at 17, whatever else,
Right. Or the
Congress does that, then does all this change? Open courts changes to 17?
No, Your Honor, it wouldn't.
It'd still be 18?
The legislature can set majority whenever it wants.
But that's right. If majority changes to 17, does that change the open courts?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't change open courts. You still have an open courts challenge. But you have to have legal capacity at age 17 or at age 18 or at age 21 or whenever the legislature sets it. You must have legal capacity at that time.
To be clear, if the age of majority were 15, a 16-year-old would only have 2 years to bring a suit.
That's correct. That's what we're saying. And in this case, because the legislature says at age 18, you can come into legal existence. And as Justice Heck correctly noted, I think, in the Reeves opinion, these tolling provisions exist because of the very sound public policy that Texas follows in terms of protecting minors and incompetence.
And as far as identifying who is legally incompetent and who is a minor, the legislature under the Family Code says if you're 15 years old, you can be certified to be tried as an adult in a criminal district court. If the legislature can constitutionally do that, why can't they do this?
They can legislatively say you can be tried as an adult, but they cannot legislatively say you don't have access to the courts. And that's the effect of what Sachs versus Vaudler dealt with. If Emmanuel Wasson's right to bring his medical malpractice case is cut off before he becomes a legal person, then he doesn't have access to the courts.
Once he becomes a legal person, then it can be cut off?
Once he becomes a legal person, they can set a statute of limitations. They could say he had 30 days to bring his lawsuit once he turned 18. But what they have said is once he turns 18, he gets 2 years. And if he brings his lawsuit within 20 months, then as a matter of law, he has filed his lawsuit on time. In fact, he has filed it with 4 years left on the statutory period. And that's why we say this summary judgment is incorrect.
Mr. Oaken, is it clear that the legislature has said that 18 is the age of the majority? We have Family Code about certifications, gold stripe, but Family Code also, I think, has an age where the child can pick where he or she wants to live. You've got the age that you're allowed to start driving, and you're allowed to drive an automobile. Is it really clear that the legislature said 18 is the age where you become a person?
Yes, Your Honor, it is clear. And that is because, and the cases are cited in the Sachs opinion, I think. But it is clear because if none of those other things happen, if you aren't certified as an adult, if you're not certified under the Family Code and your legal disabilities are removed, which Emmanuel did not happen to Emmanuel Lawson, then he becomes a legal person at age 18. That's what the cases have always held.
Why couldn't the legislature, just trying to make sure I understand your position, why couldn't the legislature say for purposes of filing medical malpractice lawsuits, you become your disabilities of minority are removed at age 14?
They could, Your Honor. And if they had done that in this case, we might have a different question. We might have a situation where it didn't violate open court.
And why isn't that what they did here?
Because they did not give Emmanuel Wasson legal capacity. What the legislature said is we will depend on his mother to do something that she never got done in this case, and that is to bring the lawsuit in his behalf.
You're assuming he could not have legally filed the lawsuit at age 14 without his mother?
That's correct, Your Honor. They could not, and that is a statutory provision, and those cases are cited in the Sachs versus Vaudler opinion as well. He had no legal capacity, and until this court can give him legal capacity, or until the legislature gives him legal capacity, it's a violation of open courts to require him to do something which is impossible.
Mr. Hogan, I guess you're, by the way you're arguing, the five if you were to admit that your client and his mother knew of the injury 2 months after it happened, had an attorney for an extended period of time, waited until several, many, many months to file a lawsuit, all that is irrelevant because he had no legal capacity.
That's correct, Your Honor. And until he gets legal capacity, then he can't do anything with that knowledge, Your Honor. And what this court said in Ruiz, unanimously said in Ruiz, is it's not the age that matters. What matters is his ability to understand and to control and to participate in the legal process.
What does the sentence mean, except as herein provided, the subchapter applies to all persons regardless of minority or other legal disability?
Your Honor, that doesn't give him capacity to bring the lawsuit on his own behalf. What that means is that we are trying to say that the tolling provision does not apply. We're trying to say that no other legal disabilities would apply. But what happens in that situation is that, that Emmanuel Wasson is confronted with the situation of where do I go to file my lawsuit? And in Sachs, the court recognized, and in these other states, the courts recognized, that if he had filed suit when he was 14, he has no capacity to do that. There is no civil procedure rule. There is no statute that says he can file a lawsuit when he's 14 years old.
Well, I might say that sentence says it, but even if you don't say that, why doesn't that sentence keep you from going to the residual limitations provisions?
It does if the statute is constitutional. If the statute is unconstitutional, that statute is void, and we don't have to worry about that language.
Why can't you say that sentence, I guess is what
I'm thinking. I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Even if the first part of the statute is unconstitutional, why is that sentence unconstitutional?
Because, Your Honor, as applied to anybody who doesn't have capacity to act as a legal person, then it is void and unconstitutional. And that's the sentence that tries to say that that he has legal capacity, I guess, when he doesn't have legal capacity.
One or two questions about this residual statute. Does your residual statute apply in a Nelson versus Nagel type of situation or where there's been a discovery rule tolling?
No, it did not, for very good reasons, Your Honor. Those cases are adult cases. Those cases are discovery type cases. Not discovery rule cases, but discovery type cases, where this court says an impossible condition confronts a plaintiff, can't discover the sponge in the body, can't discover the forceps left in the body. We will not cut off that person's cause of action before they can discover it and have a reasonable opportunity to bring suit. There's nothing. The legislature doesn't tell you if you have a sponge left in your body and you can't discover it, what period of time does an adult then get to bring the lawsuit after that? And the court looked to its discovery rule cases and said, we're going to simply supply a reasonable time. In this case, for Emmanuel Wasson, he never got 2 years to discover his cause of action or his injury and to bring suit. What must happen in that situation is that the court does not step in to create some type of an alternative statutory period as some type of a legislatively enacted statutory period that the court creates. What the court does, we submit, Your Honors, is to look to the legislature and say that once he became 18 years old and Emmanuel Wasson's legal incapacity was removed, his legal impossibility of bringing suit was removed, then you look to what the legislature says that you do, and that is you provide him 2 years from the date of his 18th birthday.
I don't want to encroach on Mr. Kronzer's time, but let me just ask you, is it essential to your argument, your contention, that it is impossible for him to file a lawsuit before he turns age 18?
Your Honor, I think that if he had legal capacity, if the legislature had provided that to him, then we would not be arguing that the open courts provision was violated because he himself would be able to bring the lawsuit, not through a surrogate.
So if it's not impossible, then you lose.
If it is possible, that's correct, we lose. If it's possible, the open courts provision is not violated. But in this context, it is not possible for him to bring the lawsuit in his own right and in his own behalf, as the Sachs court recognized repeatedly, as the Tinkle versus Henderson case recognized that this court refused.
There are some situations where it is possible for a minor to go to court and have his legal disabilities removed, but those are legislative created circumstances that don't exist here. Isn't that
correct? That's right, and that's what we're saying. If the legislature gives him the power to walk into the courtroom, then it's a different situation. He can petition under the family code to have his legal disabilities removed. but not in this circumstance where he's not a resident of the state at the time when he's 17 years old. He can't petition to have his legal disabilities removed under the family code until he is 17.
Mr. Hogan, do you agree with Mr. Houston that critical to their position is the proposition that the legal representative of the minor child can prejudice the child's right to seek relief for an injury by failing to bring the lawsuit within the 2 years by the age of 14?
No, Your Honor, I don't agree with that. It's a Great House opinion. What happens in this case is that if his mother fails to bring the lawsuit for him, then he's forever barred because if the statute runs, we're talking about the statute being constitutional now.
The effect of my question is the effect of deciding this statute constitutional, in as Mr. Houston wants it done, is to say that a minor's representative or legal guardian can prejudice the minor's right to bring a cause of action.
I think that is essential to his argument.
Okay.
And in fact, that's what he's arguing happened in this case, that because his mother didn't bring the lawsuit in time, then ipso facto, it's barred. He can't wait until he's 18.
Thank you, Mr. Hogan.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
Get around there. I had a little bout for the diabetes. And come up here and hear Richard. Richard induced me into getting in this case by a letter. I even brought it. But the letter is addressed to the fact that in recent years I have been determined to be a traitor to the cause of the plaintiffs. And they have been too many times for the defendant. So he said, I want to give you one more chance to come up and speak for the widows and the orphans of the world. I couldn't resist that, and I'm here. Let me say, if I might, in response to a question that or questions the court asked, there isn't any doubt that what is the true age of mental capacity sufficient to take care of your business is a matter that should be addressed by the legislature. The court can't be setting those dates for every purpose, for whether a kid's responsible for killing somebody at age 15, 16. So there has to be a body that has that power. Now, when they exercise that power, at least occurs to me, you determine whether under that set of circumstances the capacity to care for his own business is there. That seems so critical to what we're talking about. Sachs was a unanimous opinion of this court. So this is kind of a rare bird in those particular days. And that very issue that Judge Enoch has asked was covered in that case. It was suggested that the statute was constitutional because the parents could and should, if the court please, take care of that child's interests and rights. and go ahead and do something. And therefore, the statute was not unconstitutional. Now this court, as I say, in a unanimous opinion, said we can't let the rights of children in Texas depend upon what their parents do or don't do for them. And therefore, they struck this same principle, no doubt about it, the same statute. But recently, you had a more recent occasion to do it. In the Ruiz case, I guess that's where I'm partly here. I want to zig when the court's zigging and zag when it's zagging. But in Ruiz, the man was an incompetent. And after 5 years, and the court, through lawyers, other people. He got a lawyer that knew a little more and went down, got his disabilities removed by a true probate court order and guardian appointment.
We'll have three more minutes.
As a result of those appointments, this court held that incompetent was free to bring his lawsuit 5 years after the occurrence. And Justice Heck, speaking for the court, relied upon the Great House decision, a decision earlier by this court, but in which it was held that a guardian ad litem or a next friend could not bring any action for that incompetent. In that case, it was a minor too. And that's the case you followed. And it is a clear pronouncement of what we're talking about here about relying on collateral to do the job. And absent a proof appointed by the probate court guardian of the person or estate, there can't be anybody else to bring these statutes for these minors who were not, this young man, time of his surgery, he was already beyond 14 years. And he didn't have any power under the general rule of the statute. He just had no capacity. And he should not be deprived of full 2 years of capacity once he gets there. He doesn't and shouldn't be required to rely on his mother. If there ever had been, it was a trial on that issue, there would be plenty of good reasons why this young man didn't. But I want to leave with this thought. To the lawyers out here, and all of you have been here, predictability is a very large part of what you're going to do, and particularly decisions by this court. If Sachs didn't like the way, I really don't know what could about a statute that seeks to cut off the capacity of a child. And even one where he never had any time under the statute when he could have maintained it. And I thank you very much.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. Going to your second point, do you have any case in any jurisdiction that has a 2-year residual statute that says that under an open courts or access constitutional provision, a statute requiring a quick medical malpractice or other kind of case instruct now that you don't go to the residual statute, but that you instead go to some sort of reasonable measure for the court to make on a case-by-case basis?
The only case I found, in fact, applicable to this case was the Duval case I cited in my brief, which can be read either way. In any other jurisdictions, I suppose, I didn't look into that. There's no Supreme Court cases that I found that would hold that there is, you use the old statute, and as the court pointed out, I'm not sure that there are any say what you would do in that particular situation. So, in answer to your question, no, I don't have any cases from other jurisdictions which would hold that. I would be happy to do more research if that would be helpful, but that's not something that I was focusing on in my brief.
Well, your opposing counsel has intimated he's going to submit a...
I'll submit a reply brief to that, and I will look.
You may want to do that.
Certainly. Lucas versus United States opinion in the dissent, I think, set forth a lot of the more detailed aspects and the intricacies of applying the open courts provision to any statute, so I won't go into that further. That was the dissents that I've, in fact, used a lot in my brief were written by Chief Justice Phillips and Justice Gonzalez. The point that I tried to make, I believe, in the
point I think that needs to be considered on this appeal is this, from a policy viewpoint. Right now in this country, everyone's debating on the health care crisis, health care liability. The legislature in the state of Texas in 1977 recognized that and enacted a statute detailed that they were going to attempt to make efforts to improve health care by all citizens and address the health care liability crisis.
Counselor, aren't you really asking us to do a little bit too much? Not only are you asking us to overrule Sachs versus Wadler, Morrison versus Chandler, now you're inviting us to revisit Lucas.
Not Morrison versus Chandler.
Well, in Morrison versus Chan, I made a statement, which I recognize. In Sachs, we held that the statute cannot cut off a minor's cause of action before he reaches the age of legal capacity. But the court accepted, and I accepted, Morrison versus Chan. So we would have to...
As part of my opinion, I think, and I thought about a way to get around that. Well, I think you do, Your Honor.
How do we get around it? We have to overrule
that. You have to overrule that particular proposition and recognize, as the court is recognizing every other area in law, we allow parents to do things for our children. And so, the assumption made in Sachs, which the court, the plan, I'm sorry to take
so we do,
it.
So you do admit that. For you to win, we would have to overrule.
Under my first one and two, and then three and four, I think we talked about there. Under one and two, to hold it, the statute barred Emmanuel Watson before he even turned 18 years of age, I think you have to revisit the assumption made in Sachs that a statute of limitations cannot cut off a minor's cause of action constitutionally before he reaches the age of 18 years and the age you look at.
And then further go, because for the policy reasons of why malpractice crisis, you're saying what the court did in Lucas was incorrect and that the dissent was correct.
Well,
so overrule Lucas.
The court in Lucas was actually evaluating the damage cap limitation and not the statute of limitation.
But we talked about the policy considerations.
The policy provisions, I think the court would have to revisit the purpose of the statute of limitations in an answer to SAC. The court could hold that under the first prong of the Liebaum standard, the SACS test, that is a restriction on a minor's right of access, but the court could also look at the statute and the policy provisions of the statute under the second prong of the Liebaum and the SACS standard and determine that in this case, simply looking at the reality of the situation and recognizing that minors, that they would bring the case. And that's all I'm asking, is that look at it on a case-by-case basis rather than law this program.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mayor. That concludes the argument in this cause and all the causes we've heard this morning submitted on briefs and oral arguments. The marshal will please adjourn the court.
The audience will please rise. Oye, oye, oye. The audience is